the agenda today. Welcome, Senator Senjum, to our committee. Is this, I'll let you were here a while before, and I apologize for not getting getting to you, but you have House File, what is it? House File 203 in front of us, Senate File 261.
Just outside.
Yeah. Please go ahead, Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I've stated this before, and I'll continue to state it. This particular bill is probably a nominee for Bill of the Year, and so it's a great honor to be here to present it to you today.
I feel good, Dylan.
Senator Dibble has been especially appreciative of this bill through the years, as he has consistently been a strong advocate for it.
Oh. I have comments for that.
It's that time of year, Madam Chair. What I do need, Madam Chair, more seriously is to, there's an A1 amendment. It may have been handed out. It may be not have been handed out. But if we could hand it out, and if somebody could order that, that would, or move that rather, it would bring the bill into order with, I believe, some work that's been done in the House or will be done in the House. And specifically, and perhaps most importantly, to this committee, it would exempt the PUC from this regulatory oversight process.
Madam Chair, I'll move the A1 amendment.
Senator Brown moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? I too do think, too, Senator Senjum, there is the effective date is moved around of on the House file down to in the Senate file to the end of the bill. So
right.
It takes in the whole account. Yeah. So any discussion on the A1 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Amendment is adopted. Senator Senjum.
And Madam Chair and members, this is a bill that had a life, I think, in 2003 and 2004, one of my earlier bills, along with then Representative Seifert. And it's a bill that is somewhat simple in concept, and it basically says that if an agency of state government is to do rulemaking, and if that rulemaking costs any person or entity in excess of $10,000, and that's established during the rule development process, then it should come back to the legislature for legislative approval before the enactment of the rule. And that's kind of all it is, except there are some exceptions. If there's money in whatever statute would authorize the rulemaking to cover these costs that I'm talking about, it would be exempt. If it's a rule proposed under federal statutes, it would be exempt. And there's a third one here. If the enabling law says this doesn't exempt or this doesn't apply, then it wouldn't apply. So it would be exempt as well. And so, in essence, it's that simple. It's a regulatory oversight bill from the standpoint of rulemaking to, put some onus back on the legislature from the standpoint of saying that we, the legislature, believe that we may in some cases be authorized rulemaking that might go a little bit too far in terms of how it affects the affected public from the standpoint of cost. So if I keep trying to describe it, I'll be repetitive. So that's it.
Very good. Very good. Any questions? Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Are we going to hear any testimony?
Yes, we will. Would you like to save your comments?
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. Senator Senjum, do you have anybody that would like to testify for the bill?
Madam Chair, Mr. Hickey from NFIB he was here. I don't know if he still is here. Oh, there he is. Okay.
Mr. Hickey.
Madam Chair, I think he's still for the bill.
Welcome, Mr. Hickey.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. I've had a chance to testify a couple times on the bill, so I just want to make a couple of brief comments. We strongly support this bill as one effort to try to get some oversight, rein in rulemaking, the power of rules, as you know, over the years. Especially starting in the 1960s, there's been this broad delegation of power from the legislative branch to the executive branch, And I guess one thing is to quit doing it, but it does seem to be ever-present and go on and on and on. But over the decades of the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, through the 2000s, there has been this broad delegation of power, and it comes back to small business people, average citizens, nonprofits, big businesses in the form of rules and regulations that have the force and effect of law that they have to deal with. And there's a lot of different ways to try to deal with this. The federal government has the Federal Regulatory Fairness Act, which is a complicated law, a good one, but a complicated longer law. But this, I think one of the best things about this bill is the simplicity of it. If it costs more than $10,000, it comes back to the people who have the election certificates, you guys, to get a second look at it. Is this what you intended? Did you intend it to be this expensive? Is it too burdensome? But just most importantly, it just gives you a second look. And just think it's a real one thing we can put in the toolbox to try to get a handle on rules and regulations, and we think the amendment's a good idea to exempt the PUC. We have a more limited version of this bill in law right now in 14.127, which this bill does repeal. But in that, it did exempt the PUC, and they do have their own authority and their own rulemaking authority. And they are a separate power in and of themselves. And so I think that makes a lot of sense. And also vis-a-vis the $10,000 threshold, about almost anything they would do would probably touch that versus other agencies putting regulations on farmers and small business people and average citizens. So strongly support the bill. Appreciate Senator Senjum giving it another try and maybe second time's the charm.
Mr. Hickey, is this mirrored off of other states, what they're doing, something similar?
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of that. Wisconsin's mimicking us a little bit there. They were thinking about legislative review at a certain threshold based on what we were trying to do. I'm not aware of other states.
Any comments from committee for Mr. Hickey or Senator Senjum? Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Hickey. Anybody else who would like to testify for the bill? And I know David Thornton, the commissioner from the Pollution Control Agency, would like to come up and say a few things.
Hey, David. How do you do? Good to see you. Good to see you.
Welcome, Mr. Thornton.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is David Thornton. I'm assistant commissioner at the Pollution Control Agency. I would like to take just a few minutes to share our concerns with this legislation and to let you know that our concerns are shared broadly throughout the administration by a number of other departments and agencies, most notably Department of Labor and Industry, the Department of Health, the Environmental Quality Board, Department of Transportation, Department of Natural Resources, and the Department of Education. This bill would have broad impact. It would affect rulemaking, obviously, for all agencies. The $10,000 threshold, as it applies to any individual or entity, would probably catch most, certainly many, but maybe most rulemakings, because rulemakings do tend to affect at least a few people in some way. We think it's duplicative. Most rulemakings, even when things go right, take between 18 and 24 months to accomplish, and that gives the legislature plenty of time to step in. If you think that an agency is going too far in one way, or if you want to get more information about why an agency is choosing to go down a particular path in rulemaking. Also, the legislature has an avenue to involve itself in rulemaking through Chapter 3.84, the Legislative Coordinating Commission. To my knowledge, that has only been used once. And it happened to be a rule that the Pollution Control Agency was working on regarding waste disposal. And the legislature expressed some concerns. There were some meetings and hearings about it. And we ended up changing the rule that we were going to be promulgating as a result of all of that. So I think it can work that way. And then just finally, one of the messages that we're getting throughout this session is that government needs to move at the speed of commerce. And this is not going to help us do that. Very much.
Thank you, Mr. Thornton. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, maybe a question to our fiscal analyst. I didn't see it in here. Is there a fiscal note that accompanies this
Senator
bill?
Senjum, are you aware of one? Mm-hmm. Of course, the bill is in this committee because of the amendment for the PUC, and it has been through several other committees, I believe, Two other committees, Senator St. John, you've been through already?
Madam Chair, yes, at least two.
Mm-hmm.
And Madam Chair, I'm not seeing a fiscal, I'm not remembering a fiscal note, nor am I seeing one in my file.
Mr. Jensen?
Madam Chair, members, there is a fiscal note completed. There was no cost to the state agency in the fiscal note. Madam Chair, I could get a copy of that if the members want to see it.
Senator Dibble,
thanks,
would you care for a copy of the
fiscal note? Eventually, I don't need it right now. I was just curious. The reason I asked, Madam Chair, is because I actually, you know, we did pass a similar bill a couple of years ago, and it was unanimous. Is that correct? And the governor vetoed it. Governor was wiser than the entire legislature back then. But I did take a look at the previous bill, and it's not identical actually. The $10,000 threshold, or the examination of a rule if it's thought it might exceed the $10,000 threshold is triggered by a request of a local unit of government actually. So it wasn't construed to affect or impact anyone. And then the agents, which, you know, we can have a conversation about whether or not that makes sense. I don't know that I care about that, but I'm just pointing out that the bill is
the
not identical.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the you know, it's MMB who would typically at least initiate the local impact and could charge up to $35 per hour for their efforts to determine you know, the impact of the rule. And so that's what made me wonder if there was, in fact, a cost associated with whatever agency having to undertake this examination of impact of rules every time.
Madam Chair.
So it sounds like there's not. So there would be no need to have the fee. Okay.
Actually, Senator Vander.
Madam Chair, well, Senator Dibble, there probably is a cost to having someone else do our job, which is make the rules. So I wouldn't doubt if there was some cost to hire them to replace us, but I like it because it's our responsibility and we need to be accountable to it and not be asking state agencies to do what I think we're supposed to do, because rules do have the same effect as laws. And I think from my standpoint, this is a very reasonable limiter to ask this for this kind of examination and this kind of accountability.
Senator St. John, it just seems to me that rulemaking has gotten quite prevalent. And I feel like I'm still a freshman here, but it seems like there's a lot of rulemaking that has gone on. Do you have any information on that and what has been taken care of or taken? What a big agenda of items have been taken place because of rulemaking? Any information about that?
Madam Chair, not specifically, and just anecdotally. I mean, I think we all feel it. We all hear about it from constituents. My other life, you know, I dealt with it all the time. I dealt with implementing rules at a medical center that many, frankly, would be exempt from this because they were federally
You had another
proposed.
Life besides this?
Beg your pardon?
You had another life besides this place?
I hope so.
Yeah.
But to answer your question more specifically and with any degree of accuracy, I don't know, you know, if there's a number of proposed rules that have been implemented, or at least brought forward during a given year or biennium. Mm-hmm. There may be somebody around here that has that number, but I don't.
It was just a question.
I think we have to understand, within certain pieces of legislation, we do authorize rulemaking. I think in every case that we would, whether it's a feedlot statute that authorizes rulemaking or whatever it might be, we enable it. But then I tend to think we might forget it in terms of some of the more details. And this just says, you know, whatever that rule that we enable might be, if there's a cost that probably wasn't anticipated during the legislative process, and if that cost in this case is $10,000 or more, we ought to maybe bring it back and take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Did we really mean that what we thought when we enacted the legislation.
Very good. Mr. Hickey.
Madam Chair, sorry I'm coming back a second time. I did give no more problem. Extensive testimony in the earlier committees. I do have several examples I could share with the committee if you'd like me to, but I didn't go that in depth today.
Mm-hmm. One. Give us
oh,
one.
Okay. Well, there's a lot in the environmental area. Actually, I wish Dan Larson could be here today. He's got a conflict, but the 08 septic system rules were very expensive and very burdensome for people. And Mr. Larson represents a group of rural counties that were very concerned about the cost of them and is also a big supporter of this legislation. Senator Jungbauer is an expert on this topic, and I wish he could be here today to talk about it.
We do too.
Maybe he will someday when he recovers, he'll come back, but he can give you A through Z on that. But a lot in the environmental area. There's the hazardous waste rules of the 80s that were originally adopted then are updated frequently, almost annually. There's industrial stormwater rules from the past. A lot of different ones in the environmental area can have a big impact on property owners and people, not just business. It could be people who just have a lot of property in a rural area or a farmer, and so a lot of them. And I can go into more detail if you want me to.
Great, thank you, Senator Dibble.
Thanks. I know we're here about the PUC exemption. I'm first curious, Senator Sendrum. We kind of brushed over that pretty quickly. Why exempt the PUC?
I think I just got enough feedback, and Mr. Wolf might be able to help me here, but the PUC just seems to be an entity unto itself that at least from my perspective, there is, I think, oversight within their process, and I just felt comfortable enough thinking that they can manage this themselves, and we're going to hear back anyway. And then beyond that, I think if we were to enact this rule on them, I think virtually everything that they do would come back to us, and I'm not sure that's what we want.
Senator Sinchin, I think we're going to bring up Mr. Wolf from the PUC. Mr. Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dan Wolf, Assistant Executive Secretary with the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission. Members of the committee, Senator Sengen, thank you. I would just point out a couple of things in this respect. One is, as Senator Sengen has already stated, that the current law that was passed in 2005 does exempt the Public Utilities Commission from the current requirements that are being modified in this bill, but that exemption has been in place since the law was enacted back in 2005, and we simply would like to maintain that current exemption. It is a quasi-judicial body, and so in that sense they are different from other state agencies, and they are a deliberative body unto themselves, as Senator Sendrum said. I guess I would make three additional points. One is that everything, as has been stated, everything that we would do would be subject to this provision, because there's no small rules at the Public Utilities Commission. The people that are affected by those rules, utilities directly, are very sophisticated players and are very cognizant of the rules that are coming forward, that are being proposed, certainly have the ability to weigh in on those decisions. So it's not like there's a small entity that could be blindsided or surprised by a rule that the commission might adopt. Secondly, as has been mentioned, in order to have rules brought back before the legislature, it does add uncertainty to the process. And one thing that utilities do need is a certainty of regulation. That these are, multi-hundreds of millions of dollars of investments. They need to know the regulatory field that they're playing in. And so, again, that certainty of regulation. And I would actually submit that, one of the purposes in the budget bill of adding additional staff to the commission is to expedite the process. And this would perhaps run counter to that initiative if in fact, things were held up and there would not be that expedited process and certainty of regulation. And then third, I would say, to the extent that we're different than other agencies, as you may have heard from, concerns of other agencies, I would say that the rulemaking process is an open process at the point that the decision is made to go forward. It's published in the State Register. There's potential for hearings before an administrative law judge, et cetera. But keep in mind that with the commission being a public body in and of itself, that openness occurs before we even get to that point. So to the extent that we're even thinking about a proposed rule or subject matter, it's in a planning meeting. To the extent that it's adopted for going forward, it has to be done at a commission meeting. And all of those are meetings that are noticed, posted, the public can observe, they can participate, and all that's before the decision is even made to move forward on a particular rule, whereas other agencies, you know, those conversations are behind the scenes to the extent that this is what we think we want to do, we want to do it. Once they make the decision to go forward, it's open. But in our process, you know, even before that decision is reached, it's an open process.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Well, I agree with all of those rationales, and so I think it's a good decision to exempt the PUC. But I think those rationale or some shade of those could be applied. I bet you Mr. Thornton could probably give very similar comments about you know, determining impact and public participation, and even the rulemaking process itself is quasi-judicial in that, you know, it often is handled through administrative law judge in the Office of Administrative Hearings. You know, I'm wondering how Senator Senjum, Madam Chair, you would respond to some of the critique about slowing down the rulemaking process and not allowing for some regulatory certainty, you know, the way some entities, just like utilities, might need. How do we respond to that critique from the agencies?
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Dibble. I think I would respond this way. I think there's a good many of these rules, especially that are federally directed, that aren't going to be, and which do affect, I think, business climate in Minnesota and elsewhere, of course, that this is not going to apply to at all. And I think about maybe other things that are not federally directed, which I don't think is going to have a demonstrable effect on a lot of activity, and maybe in some cases should be slowed down. I think, again, because I used to work in this world, unless you're like really connected to the system through an advocate or an affiliate organization, whatever it might be, rules get published and notices of rulemaking get published in the State Register. Well, I just wonder sometimes what percent of Minnesotans really do on almost daily or at least weekly basis, let's say weekly, because I think it's published weekly, cover the State Register. I dare say not too many people, but that's where this activity occurs. We can like it or not. I don't think it's a magazine, so to speak, that's read a lot by what will ultimately be the regulated community, whoever that might be, farmers or hardware store owners or auto dealers or whoever it might be. They may have organizations that help them through this, but I just think that this is not too onerous. If it should get to be onerous, we can just adjust the number. But I would like to see this go forward at $10,000, and let's get a year's worth of experience with it. If it's the kind of thing that's certainly tweakable along the way, but somewhere there's a balance about where this ought to be, in terms of how much freedom do we give an agency on one hand, and then how much legislative oversight should we have on the other hand. And I think, given time, we can find that if we haven't found it already.
Senator Dibble.
Well, thanks. I don't disagree with the idea that we, you know, $10,000. I don't really actually care about the number, that we make the determination of the impact and the effect on entities, whether they be local units of government or some private entity or individuals. That's fine, and I agree, frankly, with Senator Vandeveer. That's our job. We should know that. Agency should know that, we should know that, et cetera. So figuring that out should be a part of the rulemaking process. But I do worry, Senator Senjum, about the ability to respond to emergency rulemaking, for example. I just wonder if there isn't an ability within the rulemaking process, which is already pretty robust in Minnesota and pretty intensive, and does allow for a lot of notice and a lot of participation, but we could maybe improve some of those aspects and elements. And we have the mechanisms for legislative engagement through the LCC, as Mr. Thornton talked about. I just feel like it works at cross purposes to some of the things like Mr. Thornton articulated that we all agree to. You know, sometimes the entities that are engaged, I mean, we've figured that out with this interruption of water rulemaking that was being proposed earlier, that there are some that shouldn't be interrupted because all the stakeholders, private and public, really want to move forward, and their ability to move forward in a fashion that they've all agreed to and worked hard on would be interrupted and stopped dead in its tracks. That kind of that unintended consequence of bringing all of these rules back to the legislature, if that $10,000 threshold is triggered, it's that whole bringing it back to the legislature and the time element and the potential additional expense to public agencies and private interests that I worry about. I also noticed in your earlier bill that if the impact is on a local jurisdiction but the legislature has accounted for those dollars and appropriated the money, you created an exception to the trigger of bringing it back to the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
That maybe you should pick up again and put in your new bill. So that's all I have to say.
Okay.
I'm just concerned about unanticipated impacts, slowing down a process, not maybe reforming the rulemaking process itself to address some valid concerns that Senator Senjum is articulating.
Perhaps we'll have a bill that you'll work on that, Senator Dibble. That would be a good one. You have some good ideas. Senator Benson.
Madam Chair and Senator Senjum, the $10,000 number has come up. I'm just wondering the economic justification for $10,000 versus $100,000 versus $1,000. Is it just this feels like a good number, or is there some information from the NFIB or somebody that $10,000 is a significant economic impact to a group of people?
Senator,
Madam Chair and Senator Benson, it really does boil down to a judgment, and the judgment, as we talked, for instance, about $100,000 or $10,000 or $50,000, was trying to get at rules that may significantly affect, say, a small business, and 10,000 was then kind of became the threshold, and you know, maybe it could have been 25, but we thought it, if we enact a rule that would start to affect small business at $10,000, we thought that was significant, and that ought to maybe be something that we just give a second look to, and so it's not analytical, just a lot of instinct and just based on a level of judgment that for which the criteria were about what I said. So, you know, we could certainly change the number, and maybe time will tell us if this is enacted that we should change the number. I don't know.
Good. Any further questions? Senator Senjum, this goes to the floor now. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, if there's such a motion.
Yes, and Senator Brown
so
moves
moved.
That House File 203 as amended be recommended to pass and sent straight to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Senjum.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members. Come. Appreciate it.
Senate File 736, Senator Brown.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Dibble.
This is the feel-good bill of the year.
We'll end with a happy note.
Are you saying mine's not as exciting as Senator Senjum's?
Yeah. More exciting, Senator Brown.
Yeah, it's more exciting. That's right.
It's good stuff.
Thank you.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Before you is Senate File 736, which makes a small change to the cold weather rule statute by simply allowing the cold weather rule notification to be made electronically. And Madam Chair, I do have an author's amendment and would like to move Amendment A3.
Senator Brown moves the A3 amendment. Is there any discussion on the A3 amendment to get the bill in place?
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Brown, is there somebody that's opposed to notifying a client electronically who does not get their billing that way?
Madam Chair, Senator Kubley, the amendment clarifies that electronic notification may only be made for those customers who have opted for electronic billing.
Yeah, I guess, Madam Chair.
Senator Kubley.
My question is, does somebody object to notifying a client electronically who does not get electronic billing?
Senator Brown?
I'm not aware of anyone objecting to it, if that's your question.
So why do you want to restrict it to those who have agreed to electronic billing? That's the way I'm reading it. Am I reading it
Senator
wrong?
Brown. No,
yes.
Well, how are you?
Madam Chair, members, I thank you very much for letting me just come up here. Kate O'Connell from the Office of Energy Security. The OES looked at bill, the electronic notification, and we certainly think that is the way to go. But we are aware that since we get a lot of calls from customers, there are some customers who are more sophisticated than other customers, and we just want to make sure that the customer is aware that this information will be coming electronically. My guess is that there probably will be, every customer who gets it electronically will have already been billed electronically, but just in case there are any customers, we wanted to make it very clear. We just have a different level of sophistication with the customers of utilities. So that was the only intention. I hope that answers.
Well,
Senator Kubley?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. It seems to me that we could at least give the customer the option, even though they don't get billed electronically, they may still want to receive notices that way. I don't know, just a thought.
Ms. O'Connell, is that possible?
Senator. So.
Is that possible to get notification even though you don't get your billing electronically?
I would have to, Madam Chair, I would have to ask the utilities whether they have electronic ways to contact a customer electronically if they're not receiving electronic billing. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate your question, too. I don't think, if maybe a customer wants to get a paper bill but wants to receive things electronically. I mean, we certainly wouldn't be opposed to that. We just want to, our goal is to make sure that the customer was aware that this information would be coming to them electronically.
Senator Kubley, are you okay with that? I mean, perhaps this is something that will keep evolving, and perhaps they...
Well, I understand, Madam Chair, that the customer would have to let them know that they had an electronic address, but it does seem to me there are probably those out there where the person responsible for paying the bill wants a hard copy, while the notification could go to a family member who's a little more electronically astute, shall we say.
Thank you, Senator Kubley. Mr. Fuller is just trying to bounce a couple ideas off Senator Brown. I don't know if this is something that we can get our hands around right now to address that, because I do think that's further discussion. Personally, I think the amendment is good, but if there's something perhaps we could talk to continue before this hits the floor, I would assume that it's going to pass, that maybe we can adjust it on the floor, too, with a couple word changes. But Mr. Fuller's trying to do that right now. But any other further questions on that?
Well, I have no objection, Madam Chair. I was just trying to expand it a bit. I mean, in these days, it seems like everybody's pinching their pennies, and it might help a little bit.
Absolutely. Mr. Fuller, do you have anything, any comments that you can help here?
Madam Chair, as I understand it, we are trying to expand. I really don't. The question is, do we want to amend it to say that those folks who either request electronic notice or are electronically billed can receive this notice electronically? And, I mean, we can do that. I would think we'd want to work on it and just amend it later. But we could, if you want a placeholder, we could put it online. Three of them.
Madam Chair,
yes, Senator Brown.
And the intent of this is to save postage costs to those people who do want it. So I understand what Senator Kubley is saying and would be open to amending it to that degree if we had language to that. But also just, you know, being more green, environmentally friendly, and for those people who want to go that route. So we'll be open to that.
Thank you, Senator Brown. Senator Benson.
Madam Chair, my only concern with the amendment as drafted is it gives the customer the option of choosing it, and the utility might not have a field for electronic notification by email only, even though they do have a field for electronic billing. So maybe we put it on a utility may offer electronic notification so that there could be some push from a customer if it comes up. It would satisfy Senator Kubley's request.
Well, Senator Brown, is this something that perhaps we could look into further? And if there is an agreement with the utilities and we can perhaps satisfy Senator Kubley's concerns or address his, we could continue on with that. Would that
Madam
be
Madam Chair, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So Senator Brown renews his motion on the A3 amendment. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Amendment is adopted. Senator Brown.
Yes, Madam Chair, this bill was requested by Xcel Energy, who will avoid about $70,000 this year in postage costs. The language, as amended, has been okayed by the Office of Energy Security, along with the Public Utilities Commission, as well as other Minnesota utilities and the Energy Sense Coalition, which represents low-income customers.
Wow. Senator Brown, do you have any other figures from other utilities, how much they would save?
No, I do not, no. Madam Chair.
It'd be interesting to know, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it starts to add up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think it's significant, absolutely. And there is not an oral amendment at all, Senator Brown?
No, not
okay.
The one.
Okay. Sure. Senator Magnus. And you'll spend it right away, won't you? You'll go to, your wife will. It's already spent. Oh, buddy. Other questions for Senate File 736? It's a good bill. Thank you, Senator Brown. Mm-hmm. Senator Brown renews his motion that Senate File 736, as amended, be recommended pass. All those in favor, and sent to the floor, I should say. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. The bill passes. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you.
With that, members, we will keep you posted on further hearings in the future, but it is always a pleasure working with you. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.